Fashion is a complicated world. Youthful women, beautiful clothes, and the whiff of culture and privilege is a heady mix. It's no surprise that the trends and fads in fashion have had us chasing our tails for eons. But before there was heroin chic and body positivity movements, fashion was shaping our health in a completely different way. Turns out it's not just the culture of fashion that's toxic. Today, we're exploring the deadly fashion trends of centuries past. Industrial waste, poison hats, and columns of fire are all on the docket today, and it might make you think twice about what threads you decide to rock at your next big social function. That's what you're in for today on Impolite Society.
I just detest rude, unladylike young ladies.
I hope you don't mind me being a tad rude.
I myself am strange and unusual.
Don't be rude.
That is some weird, wild stuff.
Shocking, isn't it?
It's a scandal,
but it's provocative.
Please stop making me blush.
Welcome to Impolite Society. I am Laura.
And I'm Rachel.
Question, Rachel, did you see Zendaya's dress at the Dune 2 premiere?
I have seen several of her outfits while she's out there promoting Dune. And I try not to seek them out just because knowing Zendaya exists as a person makes me feel worse about myself.
So you have not seen her C-3PO wet dream outfit.
Oh my gosh, well, but the way you described it.
Yeah, it is something to behold, and it truly illustrates the fact that fashion is just fucking weird.
I see you've added a photo of Zendaya's outfit, and holy shit. She looks good.
Of course she does.
She looks good. It's not. We don't even feel like I'm the same species. I feel like there should be another classification for people that are that good looking. Just like tall, so thin. Her outfit, for those of you who haven't seen it, it does look kind of like C-3PO if he had a lot of strategically placed cutouts and like a super thin, tall, lanky, beautiful body and just little tiny straps covering where C-3PO's nipples would be.
And it's entirely made of metal and plastic, as it would appear. It does not look comfortable. And
oh, how did she go to the bathroom?
Oh God, Lord only knows.
She's so dehydrated, there's no urine in there. I mean, she probably hasn't been drinking water for 3 days to look good in that.
And it just goes to show that fashion is fucking weird. But luckily, it's not going to kill you nowadays. I mean, who knows what kind of cancer-causing shit is in our clothes, but it won't immediately kill you, at least not anymore. That was not always the case. And Rachel and I know a thing or two about historical fashion. It isn't just drop-dead gorgeous.
I believe we both follow one specific historical clothing dress TikTok, but I follow a bunch, to be fair. Do you know there's some people out there who wear historical dress every day, their day-to-day life?
Yes.
Oh, my God. And I love watching them on TikTok and learning about them getting dressed and how they made their little costumes and their little outfits and what era it is. And it's just so fascinating. I've learned so much about what these people wore, the layers and layers of petticoats and the kind of the breeches, or that what they called? The bloomers that have the open crotch.
Breeches, yeah.
Totally explained every fucking period romance piece where they're like pushing their lover up against the wall and then just like lifting their skirt and then mounting them. I was like, what is happening? But that's just because it was all just open, right? Because you had to go to the bathroom, unlike Zendaya. So you needed that access. And you know, I'm thinking all those things and like big dresses and another thing I learned on TikTok that women used to have these big, wonderful pockets that they tied around their waist that were under their skirts. That they could just
I have seen those.
All their stuff in. Oh, bring them back. I guess they're like purses. They're the fanny packs, right? belt bags. The belt bags.
Hip
that
packs.
We wear.
That's another way to say it. Hip packs. That's another one.
I wear it like crossbody because I think that's what the youths do. Nobody does.
I just don't want to wear anything around my waist.
Truth. But when, of course, when I think of historical dress, I also think of tight, tight corsets, which, you know, might make you die, right? If you can't breathe.
No, oh, that's a whole nother episode. But it's not all just corsets and beautiful, intricate seam work, because I love looking at that shit on the TikToks.
Mm.
It could be deadly. And I mean a lot deadly, not just corset make you can't breathe. We know
corset
old
no
time...
breathe you.
We all know that old-timey people did a lot of crazy shit we know to be incredibly dangerous now. But clothing and fashion wasn't one of the things that I would have thought to be likely to kick your bucket.
Luckily, we've all grown as a species and we're not nearly so vain where we do things to our bodies to alter our appearances that may or may not be harmful to us in the future. Our vanity has subsided and we always do the thing that's healthy and rational.
Glug, 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 glug.
Are you judging me for my Modelo?
No.
My light beer?
I am not, because I'm like on my fourth cocktail.
I don't do this to look cute.
I do it because I have to.
I do this because I have 2 under 2.
All right. First up on the crazy shit that could kill you back in the days, or at least make you pretty uncomfortable, that's aniline dyes. So pre-1800s, clothes were drab. Nothing was really popping, bringing out the colors of your eyes. Scarlett O'Hara and her green curtain dress, you know, Gone with the Wind. It was at least 60 years away in this time. And most of the clothes are some shade of white, blue, rust, black. Few snazzy colors in there, the real bright ones, but goddamn, they were pricey. Purple was the color of royalty for a reason. Only they could afford it, truly. It wasn't until the discovery of synthetic dyes did the vibrant colors of nature, of flowers in bloom, of, I don't know, what else is colorful? I mostly just think flowers.
Berries.
Berries.
That's what I imagine. Everything that was pre-industrialization was just ground up berries making the clothes.
You're not wrong. a version of that is exactly how they did it. But these vibrant dyes put those colors into the hands of regular folks. And now, I am not a chemist, so I cannot describe to you exactly how this happened. But I can tell you that in 1856, William Henry Perkin made up some shit that was about to change fashion and the whole friggin' global economy. He was a chemist, and he spent his Easter vacation that year playing around with coal tar, as one does.
Yes. The many traditions of the spring festival of the solar equinox, right? You have, of course, Easter Mass, egg hunts, and coal tar. Coal tar. Coal tar. I don't know. It kind of sounds like a villain from an animated robot series. I am Coal Tar.
Coal Tar.
I come to end your world.
Well,
okay.
It does.
But what is Coal Tar outside of a robot villain? It honestly sounds like some stuff I found in my son's diaper when he was first born.
Okay. I'm not a chemist. Stop asking me hard questions. What is Coal Tar? I think it was an industrial waste product that came from burning coal. I'm not 100% sure. I'm sure there's some chemical involved in there somewhere that I don't know about. I don't want to give bad info. So let's just say this was an industrial byproduct of burning coal.
We need to get a chemist on retainer here to weigh in.
We need to get
these.
A lot of things on retainer around here. So Perkins, he was playing around with industrial waste, trying to make something useful. And that would be good business, right? Buy up shit no one wants and sell it. And he was originally trying to make medicine from malaria out of it.
You know, one man's industrial waste is another man's wonder drug, right?
But while trying to do that, he stumbled on something. The goo that he created in a test tube while burning toxic waste. Turns out it was pretty. It was bright purple, in fact.
Ooh.
And he knew he had something worthwhile immediately. Within 6 months, he had gotten a patent. started production in a top floor lab with his brother. And that lab quickly moved from upstairs to the back garden and then on into a factory of their very own.
Man, I love that he dropped that medicine bullshit like it was hot, cold, tar, or whatever the fuck he was working with. He was like, you know what? Fuck the betterment of humanity. Fuck quality of life. I'm trying to improve my quality of life by getting dirty, filthy, stinking rich.
America!
Oh, beautiful.
Lucky for the Perkins boys, Light Purple was having a moment in London and Paris. The riches were wearing it, a.k.a. the royals.
Yes, and as I understand, purple has always been, like you said, the kind of the color associated with royalty, like the deep purple. And that kind of made me think, right? Because when you think of a color that has the name royal in it, what do you think?
Royal blue.
Royal blue. So I was like, okay, what's going on here? So I did look this up, right? This is my Rachel's aside side fun fact. And it's that the term royal blue actually came from a contest where they were trying to design a color or make a color or dress or something for Queen Charlotte in the late 1700s. So like almost a century before these Perkin boy showed up, right? That's when royal blue had its little moment. But that's a little fun fact, little history tidbit of why we say royal blue, even though purples were like much more associated. And I think the traditional royal blue was a lot closer to purple.
Like more indigo-y?
Yes. Not, what's the word, azure? I don't know. What's the word for?
Azure?
Yeah. Not that blue, but yeah, more towards indigo.
Oh.
Violet.
Cobalt?
I love a whatever. Rainbow.
Well, actually, it's kind of similar because this purple was having a moment because some royal, I don't remember which, I read this in the research but didn't put it down in my notes, she loved to wear purple because she thought it really brought out the blue in her eyes. And it probably did. But because she was wearing it, it became very fashionable for everyone else.
She brought it back. Wear it. After Queen Charlotte was like, I'm all about the blues. This unnamed aristocrat was like, no, bitch, it's purple season.
On 18 blah, 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 we wear purple. But they were having a good time with it, those Perkins boys, because their dye was even more vivid than the expensive versions that were made from, like you said, crushed up bugs and shit. Like the purple that they were using were made of this crushed up lichens. I don't even know what that is. It's like a fungus of some kind, right? I don't know.
As a fungus among us.
Psh, who cares? Who cares about natural? This version didn't involve foraging in a forest, so it was a lot cheaper. And any fashionable woman of the upper middle class, or maybe even the middle class, could now dress like the royals. And if that is not a good business model, I don't know what is.
We all just want to feel rich, right? That's what we want. The crux of humanity is we want to feel like we're rich and we're elite. And if not, if that's not the case, we want to at least trick other people into thinking we are. And we will fucking ruin ourselves and our long-term success to create that illusion.
Oh, and our health. Because these chemists, more of them got into the mix. They discovered they could make even more colors from aniline. There was a Swiss company that started pumping out their own versions in even more colors. Patent schmatten, whatever, Perkins, and capitalism takes off like a shot worldwide. Not only were they making clothing dyes, they were making paints, sweeteners, inks, soap, and the first plastics, all from this coal tar-derived dye.
And they were doing that for the colors, right? Right.
Correct.
Obviously, when it, say, paints and plastics. First, when I read it, I was like, sweeteners, soaps? I thought it was like for the aroma or like the flavor or, I don't know, the health properties, since that's what he was looking for originally anyway.
Nope. Just for the colors because it looks pretty.
Some purple soap. Is that where we got those decorative soap bars that people used to put in their guest bathrooms that you couldn't actually use?
Honestly, probably. But as you can probably suss out by the title of this episode, aniline is toxic. And it, no matter if you ingest it, inhale it, or touch it, it is just not good. It damages the hemoglobin in your blood, causes liver and kidney damage, messes up your airways, all the different kinds of things. And of course, it causes cancers. But the good news, it was very dosage dependent. So wearing clothing dyed with aniline dyes didn't cause an acute kind of sickness, only some really nasty sores, because it would rub up on your skin and damage your skin cells. There wasn't enough for the aniline to off gas and get into your lungs or get too much into your bloodstream through your skin. It was really just surface level. And these sores were really prominent in socks and stockings. So when it's rubbing directly onto your skin. So as you mentioned in the historical dress, dresses were worn over these heavy layers of corsets and
thank God for petticoats.
So there wasn't a lot of direct skin-to-skin contact, but you put those snazzy colors on your feet and you were likely to get those mauve measles. That was a term that was coined in 1859 that gave you a pretty nasty case of the mumpies on your feetsies.
Man, and here I am. I can't even wear anything with a waistband after a meal.
You are not willing to sacrifice.
Yeah, they were suffering for the art, their art, for their aesthetics. They were suffering for their aesthetics. They needed those bright purple socks.
Yeah, I can't imagine being like, oh man, this thing is really fucking up my feet. Oh well.
Well, they probably didn't even know what was causing it. They were just like, man, I must not be praying hard enough.
I think that they did know, and they were just willing to suffer. So over time, the chemists, they got better with the synthetic dye process. It got less and less toxic. When you're wearing them, at least, I wouldn't go around licking this stuff.
That's too bad for the foot fetishist. Sorry, guys.
And even today, your jeans are probably dyed with a version of aniline dye. You know when you get some jeans and or really kind of any clothes that are like cheap, you know?
They have the chemical smell, right?
Oh, yeah. Those are your synthetic dyes. And
it's not even just clothes, right? It's household products because.
Oh, yeah.
One time my dog peed on a laundry basket or not a laundry basket, a wicker basket. And I put the wicker basket into our bathtub to kind of like rinse it out. And it stained our bathtub purple. So it's probably not. Yeah, they made it to look like wood wicker, right? But it's probably just plastic or something that's covered with coats and coats and coats of this kind
and
of
the
dye.
Urine probably disintegrated a
well,
lot
the
of
water
it.
If it's sitting in the water.
I think it's probably a combo.
Yeah, so now we'll I have get a purple ring on a bathtub and it won't go away. So if anybody has any cleaning tips on how to get rid of that from a clawfoot tub, let me know. Email us at rude@impolicesocietypodcast.com. Subject, cleaning tips for Rachel.
And so these dyes are generally safe to wear on your body.
Unless they are low-rise jeans, because those are never safe for any human to wear because they're awful.
Truth. Muffin top and all over.
Yep.
But we cannot say the same thing for the manufacturers because the people who are working with them, they have a lot of bladder cancer. So...
How is it getting in their bladder?
It's just, it gets into their system. And it, for some reason, bladder cancer is the thing that pops up the most because it's doing cell damage, right? And for whatever reason, the bladder is particularly vulnerable to this. But like you said, it really does make you think about all the different stuff that we have in our everyday items that you're like, shit, what is this?
Yeah, it's. Oh, that's, you know, we talked about what are we doing today that people in the future are going to look back and be like, oh, they were so dumb. It's going to be the plastics and the chemicals and everything that we're consuming in our day-to-day.
100%.
Forever chemicals or forever plastics or whatever it is. I saw somewhere humans digest a credit card's worth of plastic every year, which that doesn't seem like that much in hindsight, but.
No, it does. I just did like a face that does not.
Oh, I thought you just froze.
I got to stop doing this shit, but. Glass is so breakable. Okay. But putting all that aside, do you know what is worse than bumpy feet or sores on your feet? Generally being a human torch.
Yeah, I think that that would be worse than many things.
Yeah. So let's stick with our whole Gone with the Wind theme. And
I do declare.
And hopefully no one was going to put this podcast on blast for even mentioning Scarlett and her dress because there's some social media influencers who've really gotten shit for just wearing a Southern dress. But
oh, okay. Wearing a Southern dress. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
It's just a style dress.
I was just confused. What do you mean? I have to look more into this. Anyways, continue on.
Scarlett would not be able to get that hovering grace and splendor without her crinoline hoop skirt. And in case you don't follow historical dress societies on social media, Rachel, what is a hoop skirt?
Oh my God. I had a friend. We were so obsessed with Little House on the Prairie in elementary school, and she had a hoop skirt, and I just thought it was the coolest fucking thing ever. So let me tell you, even before I followed TikTok, I knew what a hoop skirt was. And it is a skirt that you wear under your dress, right? It's made of a light gauzy material, so it doesn't weigh a lot. It doesn't add a lot of bulk to your outfit, unlike the 15-pound dresses that you would have to wear. And it's got hoops in it, right? Like, I want to say probably like wooden hoops, but think of them like hula hoops that are growing in size from around your waist all the way to the floor. And they just make you look like a cupcake, right? It make you look like the bottom of a cake.
Totally.
And so you would wear them under your skirt. And I'm going to start completely talking out of my ass here. But I believe that they were very popular in the South, right? Which is hot and muggy. Also, why we would get potentially canceled. This is me connecting the dots to what you were saying earlier because it's associated with plantation life.
Yep. It's just a dress, though. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay, yep. Laura Ingalls Wilder also wore them, but I'm sure exactly. She was also racist as hell. So basically, it would let all of those Southern Beckys get the appearance of wearing a full skirt with a ton of petticoats underneath it without the layers and thereby the heat being trapped.
I think you are right. You're not talking out of your ass. I think you're 100% right because Whoa. It was a little roomy and there was a little draft down there, right?
You really just do a V stance and just air everything out.
Flap your skirts and let that. I mean, they didn't have a lot of feminine care products, right? I don't blame them. You need to get a little ventilation down there. Let it breathe a little bit.
Oh, God. The smells. Those poor little dogs that laid under the skirts. Oh, okay. My God.
All right. But there was a small problem with these skirts. They were wide, like Rachel said, cupcake wide, like difficult to control, like walking around an ice cake, basically.
Yeah, because you're pushed out and it's not heavy, so you don't necessarily know where it is at all times.
Precisely. And since central heating hadn't been invented yet, people spent a lot of time around fireplaces. And that gauzy light material that made up the crinolines, it was just like kindling. And I shouldn't laugh because these people turned into fucking human torches. Yes.
Oh, no. Oh, those poor Southern Beckys.
And sources estimated that around 3,000 flamey Southern Beckys death took place between 1850 and 1860.
In a decade? That,
yeah. That's probably exaggerated. Journalists are just like they are now, right? They're unreliable, sensationalists.
I would say that most journalists are probably doing the best.
Oh, whatever. Got to get them clicks. Just like back then, they got to get the page turns. Now they got to get the clicks. I mean, it is what it is.
They do better with if they were taking pictures of what was happening underneath the
Yeah, I bet
skirts.
They would. Upskirt shots. That's real popular. But anyway, it was common enough that there were several famous stories about it. Oscar Wilde's two sisters died this way at the same time.
Talk about a case of the vapors. They got vaporized.
Oh, we're mean. I shouldn't be laughing about this. This is going to get us canceled more than... No, probably not.
No, because it's white people being burned to
death. Yeah, we don't. Yeah, we don't.
Rich white folks. Eat the rich.
Well, not only were the rich people wearing these skirts, though... Not just people dancing at balls, women who were actually doing household labor, the household help that were hauling coal, tending fires. Yeah, they were wearing these freaking things. You get that coal dust on you and you get next to a fucking fireplace. Boom.
Gosh, this is a real legitimate case of where that trying to appear rich, trying to dress like the rich folks, that really comes and bites you in the ass.
Truly. And luckily, though, hoop skirts, they were fast fashion.
Of the time.
Or at least, yeah, as fast as things could get when news traveled pretty slow.
Yeah, when the fastest thing around was the iron horse. And you had to send your mail through the Pony Express.
And by the 1880s, 30 years after they kind of hit the market, the bustle replaced the hoop skirt as the undergarment of choice. And in my opinion, by far the superior trend. I mean, snatch waist and that big old booty, that's time old.
Well, that's kind of right of what the hoop skirts were doing. It was all hips, and but it was just all the way around.
Yeah, instead of just on the back. That's why the bustle's cooler.
Yeah, the Gibson girl era. But yeah, truly, it's reigned for so long of humanity. And yet you and I, we had the great fortune of coming up in the time where heroin chic was what everybody wanted to be. So raise your glasses to us young women of the 90s and early 2000s.
We ain't the fortunate sons.
No, we made it through mostly undamaged. No, mostly damaged.
Mostly damaged.
Yeah. Those fucking low-rise jeans.
Okay, so socks aren't safe. Dresses aren't safe. What a fucking time to be alive. What about hats? Those seem pretty innocuous, right?
I would guess no.
You would be correct.
Based on the content of this episode.
Well, okay, to be fair, it depends. Because if you're wearing them, you're fine. But if you're making them, at least making felt hats in the 1800s, you are not fine. You are being poisoned. Because felt is a complicated thing. Did you know that felt was fur? Or at least it used to be? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I feel like nothing's fur these days, but I had no idea that it used to be fur. Is it like processed, mushed up fur?
Bingo. Rabbits, hares, or beavers specifically. And to turn that fur. Yeah, beavers. There's a lot involved to make that fur into felt. And it used to involve urine. That was back to your laundry call out. So that's what I was saying. I think it's probably your dog urine that helped. Because uric acid. Yeah, it's an acid. It does dissolve things. It has chemical properties. So that uric acid made it easier to pressure the fur into that dense material. Manufacturers have been using urine for decades to make felt.
No, now that's the job I want. I want the person who's pissing in the felt bucket so that, like, I want to get paid for that. Like, how do you acquire the urine? Where does the urine come from?
I'm going to have to assume that it was animal urine, but I'm... Let me tell you a little bit about that urine.
From how?
Here in a
from
second.
Where?
Okay, I assume they got it from whatever animals were around, but maybe some other sources. I'll get to that in a second. But somehow they got turned on to using mercury instead of urine to do this processing. There's a story that goes, one felt maker, he made the best fucking felt, the best fucking felt. And it was because he was using his own urine. So the fact that they called that he was using his own urine makes me think that normally they were using animal
urine. Something else urine. Yeah. He was very industrious, right? He
clearly.
It's like, why am I spending my time collecting urine? How do you even do that? Sticking a cup under a horse? No.
I think I don't think cows and horses really give a shit where they pee. So you just stick a bucket underneath there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, you can do that with dogs, too, but they just don't produce enough at a time, I'd imagine.
Exactly. Got big bladdered animals, animals of labor. You need those giant laboring bladders.
Anyways, this guy was just whipping it out and peeing all over the place. He's like, wow, make some felt.
And he had the best fucking felt. And he was being treated for syphilis. And the treatment of syphilis back then was mercury. So that... As the story goes, is how they landed on mercury being really good for felt. And I mean, I don't know about you. That sounds like a lot of bullshit. But you don't know with these things that are, you know, 200 years old. Truth can be stranger than fiction. It could be made up or it could be real. Nobody fucking knows.
Yeah, let's treat a deadly disease with a deadly toxin. You know, that's really cutting off your nose to spite your face.
But it did something. That's the thing, though, right?
I believe it.
It did help at some point because they didn't have anything better. So, yeah, the people did use it. But, yeah, did it also kill you? Yeah, but so does syphilis. So it's kind of like, you know,
pick
choose
your poison.
To die slow. Or, yeah, pick your poison.
Die fast or have your nose fall off, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I'd rather die of mercury poison than live without a nose.
Truly. Does that say something about us? Anyway. In the 1800s, mercury was the go-to chemical for felt making. And it wasn't these felt makers who got the real brunt of the mercury. This is the part that I think is really interesting. It was the milliners who worked the felts into hats. There was some kind of slow reaction that took place over time inside the felt. So when they were making it, it didn't release these mercury vapors. It was over time when the hat makers were working with them, shaping, bending, heating, doing all this different stuff, that really put out those free mercury particles, and the hat makers were getting sick.
So they would, this has really risen the point that I do not understand how hats are made, because I never thought about any of this, where I guess they would buy the felt and then they would shape the felt into the hats. And it wasn't until they were in that second stage, like reheating them, that's when you really got a healthy dose of the mercury vapors.
The vapors, yeah. And what they were suffering from was erythism. This is a central neurological disorder that comes from mercury poisoning. So unlike other poisons, another one that we're going to get into later on, this wasn't super obvious and needed acute medical treatment. Erythism is much more subtle. So these symptoms included a lot of behavioral changes. Mm. Some things are listed: irritability, depression, timidness.
Huh. Sounds like I might be having mercury poisoning my whole life.
Did we ever consider that? We see how subtle this is, right? That timidness I thought was really weird. I was like,
yeah, like, what is
timidness
that?
A symptom?
What is the medical diagnosis of timidness? What is the medical definition?
They didn't give a medical definition, but the things that were listed, they listed it as like shyness, low self-confidence, anxiety, or unusual psychological vulnerability.
Are we sure they weren't just describing somebody who would go on to make podcasts?
So what I viewed this like was basically a total personality shift where you kind of turn into some weepy wallflower.
Which and it's kind of fair, because whenever I do have any kind of malady, I turn into a weepy wallflower. Whether that's just a cold or, you know, something more severe, the first symptom is I become a little whiny bitch.
Well, and so you see how this was diagnosed. It was not diagnosed as an acute medical issue. It was diagnosed as a mental illness. So these symptoms, though, they progressed. They went to delirium, wild mood swings, wild behavior changes, memory loss, pain, tremors in the hands. And so hence the term mad as a hatter.
They look like
they are totally fucking nuts.
Another thing I never put together. Mad as a hatter, the mad hatter. Mm-hmm. That he's got mercury poisoning. What a delightful little factoid.
I read a little bit about this too. The Mad Hatter character does not display any of the symptoms of Mad Hatter's disease or erythism. Who wrote that?
Roald Dahl. No. Is that his name?
No.
Roald Dahl?
No.
Lewis Carroll.
Lewis Carroll. But so he wrote him as just like this jolly, well, he was mercurial. Is that where that comes from too?
Oh my God. We're kind of busting it all open right here.
Truly.
Mercurial.
So he was a very mood swingy like character, but he doesn't have like the shakes or anything. But like, I mean, Mad Hatter, like that's just, it is kind of just a fun way to say it. But eventually doctors did realize what was going on. Hat makers stopped using these chemicals around the late 1800s. But damage can't be reversed. Once you've had these high level prolonged exposures, nothing they can do about it. But industry started phasing out using mercury in felt processing everywhere except the U.S., that is.
Oh, naturally.
We did not stop using it until 1941. So this is
like 70 years after they figured out what was going on.
Yes. Mm-hmm. In 1934, public health officials in the U.S. estimated that 80% of hat makers had these tremors. No legislation occurred to ban it. And even the hat-making unions, there were hat-making unions back then.
Very important.
They didn't say fucking shit about it, so apparently they weren't doing their fucking job. And what finally turned the U.S. off of these highly toxic chemicals, it was the war. In 1941, they conceded to using hydrogen peroxide because the government needed mercury for the war efforts.
Ah, they're like, oh, we got this poison that our people have been using just for day-to-day work. We're going to give that to our enemies. So we're going to start making them make some hats. And then 20 to 30 years, watch out, Axis. You're going to have shaky hands and wild mood swings.
I think they probably used the mercury for something a little bit more damaging, but...
Yes. What's in the atom bomb? Is mercury in there? I don't know.
Probably. It's got fucking everything in it. Who fucking knows?
I have no idea. But my main question is, why did people go into the hat-making profession?
That's a great question.
They had to have seen, right? This is like several generations of hat makers in their prime. They're just like, you know what? Live fast, die young.
Make hats.
I'll be the
Again, we shouldn't fucking laugh.
Leave a sexy corpse with a cool hat behind. This is my death hat.
Tips fedora. But this was one of those moments that, man, making this podcast sometimes makes my eyes open a little bit too wide. And this one really bummed me out. Like,
but every episode just is like, wow, something sucks.
And specifically, American capitalism. It's pretty fucking rough. But one last bummer for you. And this one is my favorite. And maybe because I like the name for some reason, Scheele's Green. It's spelled funky. It's S-C-H-E-E-L-E. I don't know why, but I just think that's a cool way to do it. Or maybe it's the color. Because if you look it up, it is such a bright, vivid, crazy green. And every time I see it, it just makes me think like acid, poison, toxic. Like it is just.
Oh, yeah. It's literally
pop.
Like the yuck.
Yes.
You remember the yuck sticker? The guy's like,
Mr. Yuck.
Yeah. It's literally that color.
And as I was doing this research, I was thinking, is this why cartoons color toxic waste and all the other poisons green? Is it because of Scheele's Green? I don't know, but that was just something that occurred to me because I can see why people were taken with it. It was created in 1775 by Swedish chemist Carl Wilhelm Scheele, hence the name Scheele's Green. Mm-hmm. Copper was being mined a lot around this time. And like we learned with Perkins, though his story takes place about 75 years later, there is big money to be made on industrial byproducts. So again, not a chemist. He did some wizardry with the copper arsenite that came from production, and he got a gorgeous green colored pigment. It was cheap to make, very pretty, as I said, and Victorians went nuts for it. They painted house exteriors. They painted interiors with paint because this is a pigment. You can put it in whatever the fuck you want.
Oh, yeah.
They put it wallpaper, clothes, fake flowers, toys, baby carriages, the whole fucking scene.
Not the babies.
Is the baby carriages.
Like there was my first house had a green tile in it. Green tile on the outside. Oh, that's something different.
I don't think so. At least if it is, it's sealed in there real well because we definitely know the dangers of that. So if it would have been, I would imagine though. Lord knows you can't fucking assume anything. But I would assume that it would have been taken out the way asbestos was if we knew that that had been in there.
Well, I mean, my house got fucking lead paint in it everywhere.
Well, lead is different. than asbestos. And as we'll see, Shields Green. This article I read had a really interesting take on why it was so popular in this time period, about, you know, the industrial landscape would popped up. It's really drab and fucking smoke
and smog and
bumming people out. And they wanted some of this nature back in their lives. It was a good read. I recommend that you take a look at it. I'll link it down there in the show notes. It's from the Paris Review. But if you're paying attention to root words, copper arsenite might raise a red flag because
arsenite
it contains arsenic, like a lot of it. And even people in the 1800s knew that arsenic was poison. It was the drug of choice for women killing their husbands back in the day. It was very hard to smell or taste. Symptoms were very similar to cholera, other diseases that ran rampant at this time of the world. People knew it was toxic, but they thought unless they ate it, it would be fine.
Got it. They just didn't. As long as I don't lick my dress, I'm good. Or my wolves.
That's what they thought. No such luck. Because people started getting really, really sick. And it was hard for doctors to pinpoint because not everyone reacts the same way to a slow poisoning. Some people in a Shields greenhouse would be perfectly fine. And other people would be vomiting profusely, basically on their deathbed. Not only was it dosage and exposure dependent, it also depended on the person. Some people could tolerate a lot of this arsenic in their system without any symptoms, but then others very quickly would get sick and have to call the doctor. People would come in and then the doctor would be like, two of my patients have the same green wallpaper. And wallpaper in particular was very deadly, more so than the paint, because it flaked more. It had more rustling to put it up. Once it was up, you could scratch it, and it would just come free a lot quicker. There's even a theory that Napoleon died actually from arsenic poisoning because he had wallpaper in his, little banish you room, his bedroom that included Shields Green.
Oh, okay.
And when they autopsied him, he had a bunch of arsenic in his body, like modern day autopsying. Autopsying? Oh. Is that how you say that?
Autopsin. That's how I say it. I don't know if it's right, but that's how Rachel of Implant Society says it, autopsin.
Symptoms of arsenic poisoning can include severe abdominal cramps, vomiting, diarrhea, heart arrhythmia, pain and weakness, and pins and needles in your extremities, and all around organ failure, so death. And then, of course, the old standby cancer.
Yeah, if you lived long enough to develop it, right? If you made it through all the other symptoms.
Precisely. If you were one of those people who did not succumb to those immediate symptoms from the acute poisoning, you probably have it in your body and it's likely going to cause cancer.
Lovely. A color worth dying for.
And a particularly sad story is the death of Matilda Schruer. She was a flower maker in London. Fake flowers were all the rage at this time. See above that kind of theory about Victorians needing some nature in their lives. Many women and girls worked in factories painting flower stems green.
Oh, no.
Matilda was only 19. And in 1861, in her final days, she vomited green fluid. The whites of her eyes turned green. And she told the doctors that everything she saw was green.
What a way to go.
I know. And her final hours were full of intermittent seizures. And when she finally died, reports said her face was fixed in an expression of pain. Rather than, you pass away and like your face slackens, like hers was like frozen. And again, take reporters with a grain of salt, especially back then. But her autopsy later showed that arsenic was in her stomach, liver, and lungs in very high levels. All signs of long-term high doses of arsenic. So,
man, this is like looking in a mirror, because I so would have died for this shit too, because I googled it and I'm like, these dresses are gorgeous. Like,
I know,
I would love to wear. So I would have realistically, I probably would have been in the factory painting flowers as opposed to wearing the really fancy pretty dresses. But I would have fallen right into this trap.
take a look at the wallpapers. They're also very, very beautiful.
Ooh, I will.
So after reports of Matilda's death reached the newspapers, and that happened with the help of some of the activist upper class women. These are women who ran in the same circles as these green dress wearing socialites who were wearing these fake flower crowns that were so popular. So we can't eat all the rich, because there were some people who were doing the good work. They got this out. They had a campaign against it. After this reached, you know, everyone's news desk, basically, the fad had faded fast. But from its invention, from 1775 to 1861, it was very, very, very popular. So some European countries banned it in the 1830s and 40s. So we were up on it, but it wasn't until Matilda's death that did it really fall out of fashion and just get dropped.
She really was the martyr for the cause.
And it just goes to show one person can make a difference. All you have to do is die horribly.
And have your story told in a very public way.
Yeah.
So much so that you're mentioned on a podcast hundred plus years later.
Yeah. And it also makes me think of like all the European countries that have banned a lot of stuff that we have not banned here.
Ooh.
In America. Yeah.
Microplastics again.
Yeah.
Back. Why does the European version of this food have like 5 ingredients and the American version has 27?
Yeah. They're not looking out for you, folks. They are not looking out for you. It really made me, all this research made me pretty paranoid about the things that we consume and all the different things.
But yet we hate on that woman who's making the Fruit Loops for her kids from scratch. You ever seen her?
Yes, I have seen that bitch.
With her weird-ass smile.
It's her weird-ass smile and what she wears and, like, the way she never smiles and the way she's posed herself against the cameras. Like, oh, it's the fucking weirdest shit in the world.
Oh, she knows what she's doing.
And I will not apologize for hating her, because I will hate her for forever.
We're rotting our bodies out with this chemicals, and we're rotting our brains out with the social media.
Pick your poison. Or just do both.
C'est la vie, you know? Live fast, die young, leave a corpse with a cool hat. I just cheers to myself. It doesn't sound right when the one glass is on the ground. There you go.
There you go. It's, but really, more likely, we're just going to keep doing what we're doing and die horribly of cancer in a nursing home in a slow, painful, very expensive death.
I'm rooting for dementia, because I want to really relive my childhood.
Well, on that note, leaving y'all on a high up note, enjoy your fun fashion. Don't think about toxicity. Don't think about the Chinese slaves. Just go to Temu and Shein. Do your thing. Work it, girl. Buy those fashions.
Buy those fashions. Laura, where'd you get the clothes you're wearing right now?
China, just like everything fucking else. I'm not pointing fingers. I'm pointing them right back at me.
Guess where I got all the clothes I'm literally wearing right now. Temu. I didn't plan this. No, I got them from the Goodwill because...
Oh.
Less waste or something, a.k.a.
I'm cheap.
Yeah. So now that you're feeling warm and fuzzy, be sure to tell a friend about this podcast so they can also feel great about themselves and their fashion choices. Just kidding. We're not shaming you. We're here with you. Live fast, die young, leave a corpse with a cool hat. And but reality is, please share the podcast with somebody that you care about, because we are a completely grassroots podcast. We live off recommendations, and that's how we grow. So if you like today's episode, please tell somebody in your life about it. And if you don't have anybody to tell about it, then leave us a 5-star review or rating on your platform of choice, because that helps other people find the show.
And don't forget, send your cleaning tips on Rachel's bathtub too. Rude@impolitesocietypodcast.com. Let us know you're listening. Let us know that you care.
Precisely. We care about you so much that we will share our cleaning tips with you. If you want cleaning tips, email us at rude@impolitesocietypodcast.com and I will say, oh, vinegar.
Bleach. That's what Laura says. Put some bleach on it.
Just drown it in bleach. I don't care about the chemicals that my animals get on their little feces. Sorry.
I don't.
They're
just for the record. I
moral
don't.
Of the story, but the real moral of the story is to stay rude and never, ever stop marching to the beat of your own drum. Do your thing, girl. Work it.
You better work, bitch.
Leave a cool cat corpse.
Crinolines. Damn it. Which made up the crinolines.
Crinolines.
Fucking hell. I can't fucking say it. Crinolines.
Yeah.